Scott.
This is Pat.
Boy, we got a great program this week. We've got a professor who's going to talk about if you can visualize your future self, what you look like when you're old, how that helps you save for retirement.
We're also going to give you three pointers to look out for when you're meeting with an advisor and really let you know when you should run from them.
And we got a bit of a crazy caller. I think you'll want to stick around. Plus, Barbara Healy, certified financial planner here at Hanson McClain, is going to share financial stories. So stick around for Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
And now, Barron's ranked top 100 independent advisors. It's time for Scott Hanson and Pat McClain of Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad to have you here on this weekend. Both myself and my co-host here, we both are financial advisors. Come and help people like yourself throughout the week. We come here on the weekends to be your financial planners on the air. And I guess financial planning, what we mean by that is not just the world of investments. Sometimes you hear the word financial advisor, and I think the financial advisor encompasses anyone that sells financial products. But really, financial planning is about tying in not only in the investments, but all the other areas of your financial life. So whatever debt you might have, college education, your retirement, mortgages.
Wills and trust recommendations, although we don't do them ourselves.
Yeah, but that's so financial planning is all those sort of things. And so
that surround you and your financial life.
Yeah, and that's the
the cornerstone of our business, if you will.
The cornerstone.
Financial cornerstone. Financial planning is the cornerstone. Meaning
well,
the stone
so
in which
important.
You start the building well, is the cornerstone.
You, thank you, Pat, for explaining what a cornerstone is.
But thank you.
Anyway, we come here each week to be your financial advisor on the air. And if you'd like to join us with one of your questions you may have for us, it might be you're considering something yourself in your financial life and trying to figure out the right thing to do. Maybe someone's pitching you some product and you're wondering, I don't know, should I really be buying this or not? Maybe just like a second opinion on a strategy that you're employing currently. Whatever the case, if you'd like to join our program, to call us, you call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. So glad you are with
and,
us.
So speaking of,
as we're coming into the Christmas season.
Speaking of, you were saying someone that was trying to sell you something. You started telling me a story before the show, and I said, "Wait, don't tell me. I don't want to hear the whole thing."
That's what Pat normally happens throughout the week. I try telling Pat a story about something. Wait, don't tell me.
Don't tell me. I wanted you to save it for the radio show, and you already was. I assume it was a Christmas party.
Christmas party.
Was it at your house?
Yes.
You can tell me.
A week
I wasn't
ago,
invited.
You were not invited. It's for my wife has this group of women that she meets with every week, and it was for these women and their husbands. So there was probably, I don't know, 30, 35 people at our house.
Oh, the only way I could go is if my wife got into your wife's little circle of friends.
She's not invited.
Okay. So you're at this party at your beautiful abode.
Yes.
And tell me the story.
So here's the story behind it. So this guy comes to me, who's also a friend of mine, and says they've been looking for a financial advisor. And so they had the same person for a while. Anyway, it's classic case of the youngest kids are, I think, their second year in college. Maybe. So their kids
are either, is a friend of yours that you have not hounded to become a client of?
My business card is a sponge. So, I throw them around at Christmas parties. And I have made a Christmas tree now, too, for Christmas parties. Hey, I'm going to have a little free decoration. Is that my picture? Squeeze here for financial advice. So, anyway, he's telling me, I'll call him Jim, because that's his name. So Jim comes up to me at the party and says, he's talking. He says, I've been looking for a financial advisor. I told my wife, we need to get a good financial advisor. And he says, I met with your advisor, one of our advisors, and I loved him. He said, and I'd met with three others.
Wait, that is not an endorsement, by the way.
Because I met with three others, and my wife said she was
three others at other firms.
Yes, he said my wife said she wasn't going to go with me until I met the right advisor. And he said, what I liked about your advisor, I mean, this isn't a sales pitch, but the one thing he said to me with the whole point of this story, he said, yeah, he didn't try to sell me life insurance, and everyone else I talked to tried selling me a big cash value life insurance
on the
policy.
First or second appointment?
Yes. I said, You're kidding. So here's this poor guy, Jim, comes up to me.
Oh, wait, the kids are almost all out of the house?
They're out. Yeah, he's mid-50s, I guess.
He has absolutely no need for any cash value life insurance.
Three people. He's trying to interview an advisor. Three people all tried pitching him some life insurance. He thought he's trying to find a financial advisor.
But not our firm.
Sell life insurance, nor do we try to sell product in the first meeting. So it was interesting. The reason I brought this up, I thought, how prevalent is this? Granted, it's a pretty small sample, right? Statistically, not relevant. But I'm thinking, he's the kind of person that could really benefit from some quality advice. Professional guy. Makes a good living. Got his kids all through college, or almost done through college, trying to figure out what are the best moves he could be making now to prepare himself for retirement, interviewing advisors, and that's the experience of the poor guy.
So, if you're looking for an advisor, if you're out interviewing financial advisors, either by yourself or you and your spouse, or just out looking for financial advisors, let's give someone a couple things to think about, Scott. If you had to name three things that you should actually pay attention to when you're out interviewing financial advisors. The first thing I would do is...
Their suit. What kind of clothing they wear. Sharp dress, that's important.
Is to do a background check. And on our website...
You even go in and see the person.
Before you visit the person, you can do a background check on it. On our website, moneymatters.com, we have about 8 or 10 minute...
No, I think it's about a 5 minute little...
video called Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits, the three things your advisor may not want you to know.
But if you don't want to download that, if you just go to Google Broker Check, just remember the phrase Broker Check. Google Broker Check, it'll take you to a site where you can put the person's name in. It'll give you a background information on that advisor. Broker Check.
So the second...
Just Google Broker Check.
The second...
Check. Right there, you'll find out what their education is. Have they been fined or barred? There's a gentleman in Northern California that was kicked out of the industry for 5 years.
Yes.
And somehow he continues to get clients.
So the second thing you want to look at or think about or pay close attention to when you're meeting, interviewing advisors is, are they offering product solutions right off the bat? So are they suggesting a big fat annuity before they even understand your problems? Are they suggesting a cash value life insurance policy? Are they suggesting some long-term care or some structured product such as a limited partnership? So if the advisor is big into offering product solutions before they actually diagnose the problem, beware.
And, so funny, at my Christmas party, there was also a gentleman there who's a physician. And he works, he's done a bunch of, his primary thing now is the doc in the box, that maybe not be the appropriate term, but the urgent care clinics, which I think fantastic most of the time. But he's telling me, he says everyone wants they all want a product. They want a prescription. They all want, years ago he tried to get someone come in with a virus and he'd say,
virus is going to run its course.
And they'd say, no, I want an antibiotic. And they'd say, well, no, you don't. And then they'd leave and they'd get upset. And it says, so now
he just
writes a prescription. Also with Obamacare, people, their payout, their payments are based upon their approval ratings. Hospitals.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So
it's not called Obamacare. It's the Affordable Care Act.
So in his profession, he says he always offers the product solution.
Because it keeps
because that's what people want.
His ratings high, too.
No, he says that's what.
And so sometimes a good financial advisor will tell you to do nothing. Sometimes the best thing for you to do is nothing. The third thing you want to pay attention to if you're interviewing an advisor is that if they push you to make decisions quickly, if they say you need to do this now or time's running out or the rules have changed or the rules are changing or you need to do this immediately, run away. Just run away. So those are the three things that you need to look at when you're interviewing financial advisors. Background check. Go to brokercheck.com. Are they offering product solutions? And do they push you to make decisions quickly? Because it's a big decision to choose a financial advisor.
If you want a financial advisor, I would assume you would like somebody that you could work with long term, right? Ideally, it's a long-term relationship. So you got some advisor trying to push some product right off the bat. maybe an advisor who's kind of slow to want to take you on as a client would be the best kind of advisor.
Yeah, maybe you should think about that.
Yeah, so that's something that we would recommend looking at. Well, anyway, let's talk to our guest now. Well, on today's show, we have Hal Hirschfield. Hal's the assistant professor of marketing at UCLA's Anderson School of Management, obviously quite well-renowned. Hal will be joining us to talk about his research that shows, this is kind of interesting, when we know that, if we know what we look like in our old age, we're going to be more willing to save money for retirement. So if we can have some sort of picture of what we look like in the future, his research shows that it's going to be, it'll help us in our own retirement savings. So let's welcome Hal Hirschfield to the program. Welcome, Hal.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much for being part of the program today.
Hey,
so,
and Hal, while I have you on the phone, UCLA, my son's applying. He's a senior in high school. Do you have any? You got any juice down there we can spread around?
That depends how this interview goes.
I'm not even sure I know where that totem pole is for me to go on. You know,
All right.
It's a different part of campus. Anyway, good luck.
So you've got that's how Pat lives his whole life. Always trying to
asking for favors. As soon as I meet you, just a little thing.
So you did research on, and I saw some of the stuff online. It's pretty cool, and there'll be a link to it actually at moneymatters.com. You can get a link right to it. But you can you would show someone's future self. So, like, what I'm 50 years old now, what I might look like at say 70, and this by people seeing their future self, it helped them to save more today. Tell us about this.
And tell us about the methodology you actually used to measure this, please.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, so that's the right gist. Essentially, what we did is we started with the question of basically why is it so hard for people to do the things that they say that they want to do. You know, this is retirement saving. To me and to a lot of other researchers is just one example of many different types of phenomena where people have the best of intentions. But then when push comes to shove, they can't quite follow through. It's similar to eating healthy. It's similar to, you know,
stop smoking.
Exactly. All these sorts of things. And so, you know, there's a sense that one of the reasons for this failure to sort of act in the way that we want to is because we have a difficult time sort of fully, call it empathizing with who we'll be in the future. We have a hard time sort of stepping into the shoes of our future selves and seeing the world through, you know, his or her eyes and sort of saying, well, you know, what would things actually be like if I were to do X, Y, and Z today? And so, you know, people can think about it. Of course, we know what it's like to say, like, well, if I save more, I'll have more money. But it breaks down a little bit after that because, you know, the present is, it's emotional and it's here and it's concrete and the future is kind of abstract. Yeah. And things don't seem like they'll be the same. You know,
in your 401k savings, you want to take the kids, well, kids might just need shoes, or you might be trying to plan a family trip to Disneyland and you got a lot of competing pressures.
Yeah, and the 401k never complains, only the wife and kids.
That's exactly right. You know, that's funny that you say that. There's this great, I always refer to this this banner that was actually hung in San Francisco several years ago, where some guy hung a big sign that said, "What have future generations ever done for us?" And, you know, I think it's a similar sort of idea that we can make these sacrifices for our future selves and, you know, what have they ever done for us? And on the other hand, if we do something bad for them, they're not complaining. So we kind of, it goes kind of both ways. Yeah. in a way that doesn't really help us, you know? So what we essentially were grappling with theoretically was this idea that the future self in many ways, it seems like it's another person of sorts. So it seems as if it's kind of separate from us. We don't know him or her that well. And you know, this is just a metaphor obviously, but I think it's one that works. And so what we started reasoning from that sort of starting point was, well, look, you know, if the future self is sort of thought of as another person, what are some of the things that we could do then to get people to take care of that future person? And so to answer that, you can start thinking, well, what are some of the things that we can do to get people to take care of other people today. You know, so you think about, say, charity or, you know, microfinance lending or any of these sorts of things that requires people to take their hard-earned resources and redistribute them. And so, you know, one thing that we know that works is essentially increasing how vivid the other people are perceived, right? So, you know, this is the sort of classic research on charity giving, that, you know, that the one picture of the starving kid.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Sally Struthers the model, right?
Exactly. And that pulls at the heartstrings. It's more emotional than the statistics, right? And so we sort of thought, you know, there's just something similar going on there with people and themselves.
So like if Pat saw a picture of himself, people would feel sorry for him just by looking at that face. That's where I think Hal's going with this. Hal,
I wasn't quite sure how to drive up to that, but I thought I'd go slow.
Well, you're a college professor; you'll figure it out.
Exactly. This is Hal Hirschfield here.
Yeah,
this suit came with
a bowl of soup.
our guest Hal Hirschfield here at Hanson McLean is talking about his research on helping people figure out how to save more. What's hindering people from saving? So continue.
So now I start to recognize my future self. How do you present that to me? Like, you know, you show me getting out of bed in the morning cranky and old and just
like
a little bit irritable.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. We, you know, so I'll tell you, we started with this in a very sort of stripped down version, which is before we get into the different scenarios and the, you know, what do you look like, you know, in the morning getting out of bed with your trick knee and that sort of stuff. We said, let's just try to show them what they'll look like in the future. And so, you know, we've done several different versions of this study, but one of them that I think is maybe the most fun to talk about is one where we basically took photos of people and used software to age progress those images. So, you know, there's some packages out there that allow you to take people's photos and you can turn those photos into an avatar. You know, it's like a digital rep, right? And then there are algorithms that you can use that will essentially age the face. It mimics the process of aging. So you probably know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, isn't that depressing though for people? How does this help people save more? When I can see myself as a
right.
I mean, I didn't start very good looking to begin with. So it's just seeing the future. It's not.
We only use very attractive undergrads.
So you've got these students and you put them in this thing.
So we basically, what we do, one of the studies we did, we used a virtual reality setup.
Okay.
Where this was at Stanford, and you know, some of this research is still ongoing. Where people, you know, they walk into a room, it's just a regular room, but they put on these virtual reality goggles, which, you know, now are, we've seen, right? You know, Samsung has these. But this was still a couple, you know, several years ago before they had these sort of for mass consumption. This was a fully immersive virtual reality experience. So essentially what that means is that you'd put these goggles on and you would walk around a physical room, but in your goggles, it looked like you were walking around a virtual room. So it's a little different than the stuff now where you've just got these goggles on, you kind of move your head around. And what would happen is people would walk around this room. It was a room like any other sort of, you know, like a virtual room that looks like your living room, essentially. And there's a mirror in this virtual room, that is a virtual mirror, I should say.
Oh.
And you walk up to it, and staring back at you is either an image of yourself today or an image of your future self.
Got it.
And then we would have people, you know, it was a controlled experiment.
Yeah.
So we had sort of a script, you know, people had to follow where they would ask questions and they'd have sort of a conversation with the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror. But, you know, again, half of them saw an aged version and half and half saw this, you know, the young version. And so from there, we would take them out of this setup and they would do some questionnaires, and the crucial questionnaire asked people how much money they would put towards a long-term savings account if given the chance. You know, if I think there was something like if you were given $1,000 today, how much would of that would you allocate toward a long-term saving plan. And what we saw was that the people who were exposed to these aged images put about twice as much money in.
All right, and how? So let's just say, we'll take a hypothetical. You had a 20-year-old, and you showed that 20-year-old as a 20-year-old, and they put about half as much away as a 20-year-old that looked like they were 60. Is that correct?
Looked like they were 70, but yeah, okay. Exactly. That's the
and
right
did you use a middle line anywhere to see if that would change the behavior? Let's say like a 45-year-old, did they have a reaction at all to that?
It's a great question. We didn't do that. We wanted to sort of...
Because it was a control group, right?
Yeah, and we wanted to explicitly... We wanted to make the comparison between you today and you in the future a pretty sharp contrast. So that was, you know, where we started, and you can see a very clear difference between someone who's 20 or 22 and someone who's 68 or 70. We've since done this with people as they get a little bit older in their 30s and 40s projecting to retirement age. What we haven't done, you know, it was interesting that you started with the example of saying you're 50 looking forward to the future. We actually haven't done that because in a way the contrast isn't quite as strong, so people don't notice it as much. And the other thing is, you know, we're going after this from a practical perspective, which is you can make a big dent in retirement savings, as you know, of course, if you start early, right?
Okay.
So
if
So
this is all theoretical. Tell
He's
me.
A professor. Sorry, Al.
So how are you using it?
That's what I was going to say.
I get it, right? Because you're perfect. You use the perfect analogy because you actually compared it to charitable giving in a single story. So now all of a sudden, when I'm 20, I get to kind of see parts of my story so I can now empathize with my older self. And I don't want my older self to be poor, right?
Right, right. That's exactly right. And so, you know, when you say, how are we using this now? I mean, this is kind of taken on the, you know, a classic path of some academic research, which is, you know, we ran these controlled studies and with the knowledge that, you know, putting people into a room with virtual reality, that's not a practical, that's not the type of thing that's going to scale up on a mass level, right? And it was really to sort of show, you know, test an idea and, you know, maybe show a demonstration of a point. And since doing that, we've done one field study where we've looked at employees at a university to try to talk to them about saving and have, used just messaging there, not actually an image of anything, but have said to them, you know, one group got this sort of standard retirement appeal of, you know, it's in your best interest to save more, and another one got an appeal that said, it's your responsibility to take care of your future self. The interesting thing about that theoretically is that it's not really the way that people think about it. And when you put essentially another person on the other side of the retirement divide, now all of a sudden it's like, you know, I can mess up my life as much as I want, but if I'm affecting someone else's life, well, now I got to pull things together.
So did you do any testing where it's aspirational goals are of a greater value than as opposed to just taking care of this older person who's going to be poor if you don't, who just happens to be you?
No, we haven't done that. We've talked about doing something like that. The issue is you end up with some variability in terms of, you know, all the different goals that people have out there. And it got a little messy for us from a sort of an experimental context. Right. But I think your point is a great one. And I think if, you know, you were saying, you know, look, this is theoretical, right? But if you take this into the practical realm, I think the real practical thing is to essentially say there's all sorts of ways to motivate people to save for retirement or for anything that's in some future period of time. And we're essentially just taking a different approach, which is to say rather than motivate them by, you know, the reward itself, or now you're going to have time for an extra round of golf or this sort of thing. We're just sort of saying, look, let's not forget that there's another person there and it's future you who will either benefit from or suffer from the things that you do today. And I think that's just a slightly different perspective that gets people to start thinking a little differently about their decision that they're making today.
Well, Hal, I think it's cool research you guys are doing. And again, at our website, go to moneymatters.com. You can get a link and you can see some samples of the work that Hal Hirschfield has been working on down at UCLA's School of Management. So, hey, thanks for
thank you.
Thanks for joining us today, Al.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
I appreciate it. And, you know, here at Hanson McLane, I mean, our objective is to help people with their finances. And if we look, Pat, if you half of 55-year-olds in this country have nothing saved for retirement.
Which
half.
Is a scary, scary thought.
And, you know, the better job that we collectively, we can do in helping people save for retirement, whether that's collectively the financial services industry, collectively humanity at large, I think the better off we will all be. So anyway, kind of cool stuff that they're working on. We're taking a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take some calls. Again, if you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. We'll also have a conversation with a Hanson McLane advisor. So stick around for more Hanson McLane's Money Matters.
To Hanson McLane's Money Matters. Two guys, two brains, and one head of hair.
Welcome back to Hanson McLane's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLane, thanks for joining us in our second half of the show.
That's right.
It's going to be so much better than the first half. Promise.
Particularly that guest.
I can't even say promise. In our industry,
that's
compliance.
Past performance is not indicative of any sort of future results.
So I cannot promise the second half is going to be any better or worse than the first half of the show.
Well, we can be pretty confident it will be different.
Yes.
That we can be fairly confident.
I can.
And if you'd like to be a caller on to Hanson McLane's Money Matters with your question, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766.
And we'll get you
on the air. 888-242-6766. And we may get you on the air.
We could talk about your problems.
Yes. Well, not all their problems. Some of their...
Some of the solutions, some good things.
Yeah.
But let's go to the call. 888-2-HANSON.
No, we're not ready for the calls.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were taking the calls.
Here's the funny thing. Here's the hilarious thing. So we've got people helping us with the program, and they get this nice little clock.
I saw it.
With things right here listed at the times. And I even said to Pat, I wonder if we should have less numbers on here so we can focus on the important ones. We have a clock. We have a clock. I swear to you, this clock is 2 feet by 3 feet. It's the biggest clock imaginable right there so that we know the times. We have a sheet of paper that tells us at what times we should be thinking about moving to the next thing.
I made a mistake.
And I even write things down, and then I point to Pat. So, like, Pat, why don't you bring up this topic?
And, I made a mistake.
It's okay, Pat. It's Pat's first mistake.
All right. Anyway, speaking of.
There was an article that I saw in the last week, and it caught my attention because here's the title of this article. Morgan Stanley toughens some pay hurdles for brokers.
What does that mean?
A good article would get you to read the article. A good headline. Yeah. Whoa, what does that mean? So I read that.
Toughens up pay standards for Morgan Stanley
toughens
brokers.
Some pay hurdles. So as I read the article, basically, and I don't know how if this is in the Wall Street Journal. So some of the Wall Street Journal got privy to what the pay plan was for Morgan Stanley's brokers. Who money call themselves financial advisors, they get paid a certain percentage of what are fees or commissions they generate, and the more income that they generate, the more percentage they can keep for themselves.
So if they're generating $500,000 a year, they make less money as a percentage than if they generate $1 million a year.
So a broker, according to this article, a broker who generates $220,000 next year will get paid 28% of that under the 2017 compensation plan. It's down for this year was 32%. So they're getting quite a bit in pay cut there. But for some of the biggest producers who are generating millions, they might get up to 55% of the revenue. So if brokers incentivize not only as a percentage of the revenue, but they know that if they can generate a little more revenue, they get a higher percentage of that revenue. So maybe as the year's going on, they're like,
I need to push this a little bit harder.
Push a little more. Not only will I generate that additional revenue from that next new client that I might.
But in arrears.
And frankly, there could also be some pressure of, if I can generate a little more revenue off an existing client, not only will I get paid that commission off that existing client, but somewhere else. That's what that.
Well, look, this is weird about this. Is that this is in the wake of Wells Fargo,
right? There's also they're still having something. They'll continue. It says right here, Morgan Stanley is going to continue to offer bonuses to brokers who sell debt products, such as security-backed loans and mortgages, as well as for getting clients to use their banking products. Two incentives the bank is using to increase its loans and deposits. So they're getting, they are incentivizing their financial advisors, their brokers.
This all goes back to the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act.
Which means a lot to our listeners. So glad you brought that up. That Glass-Steagall Act.
Which means that years ago, what year was it?
We were on the air. It was repealed in 1999.
Yeah, we were on the air back then.
Yeah.
And we said this will not end well because what happens is it allows the banks and the brokerage firms and the insurance companies to commingle.
So here's the takeaway of this. Look, and we're not saying that there are bad advisors at these big firms.
But there can be. But they can be good ones too.
Yeah, the challenge is the environment in which they operate. I was talking to a friend of mine who's actually one of these big firms, and is an advisor. I said, why don't you go out and create your own registered investment advisory firm or go join with it? Why are you still there? And a lot of them are they've got these kind of golden handcuffs, so to speak, there's compensations. Anyway, they're just riddled with conflicts of interest. If you've got a financial advisor at these firms and they're recommending one of their loan products.
Or a mortgage.
Or some financial product that the firm manufactures.
Stay away. And by the way, if you're comfortable in retirement, most of you don't need a loan. If you can go into retirement without a home mortgage, go into retirement without a home mortgage.
Well, certainly don't let your financial advisor talk it into something that there's some. Your best bet is just having to reduce these conflicts and work with an advisor on a fee-based fiduciary approach where you pay a fee that encompasses everything. So and whether the advisor recommends product A, B, or C, it doesn't change their compensation at all.
The reason I brought
this up, it kind of frustrates me because you got a financial advisor who's going to be incentivized to generate more commissions. There's the stress and that pressure on them to center. It's just not a healthy thing. That's our opinion. That's why I brought up the thing here. Anyway, 888-2.
Actually, it's not only our opinion.
It's the right one.
It should be your opinion as well. That you don't want this conflict.
Correct.
Right? You wouldn't want to. Well, I shouldn't say. There are many industries that don't have conflicts. There are many industries where you have a choice between having advice with a conflict or without a conflict.
That's right. So anyway, let's take a call. 1-888-2 Hanson. And let's talk to Dave. Dave, you're with Hanson McLean. Yeah. Hey, Dave.
Okay. Yeah, I got I'm a pensioner. I'm 63 years old. This is my experiment year. This is the first year where all my income is, I think we call it unearned.
You just
Social Security and
you just
pension.
Retired?
Well, last year, but this full year there is no, you know, income from like work.
Got it.
Or business.
How's it feel?
It's all free. Oh, I'm loving this.
Okay.
This is great. I just got back from my boat. And I'm waiting for some paint to dry, and then I'm going to go back out there.
All right. Sounds nice. Great. So, waiting for paint to dry.
That's what I thought. That's the irony. That you said that.
I said the happy retiree waiting for paint to dry.
That's the title. That's the headline.
It's actually epoxy, but it's the same thing.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
It takes longer in the cold.
Okay.
So I have, and I have had in an IRA, stock. Shares in Santander. It's a big, big, huge Spanish bank, and they pay out dividends. They have dividends, so good ones. I mean, substantial ones, and so up until now, they have three options to take the dividends. You can take the dividends in shares, and then you don't pay a tax, or you can take the dividends and. As rights to buy shares, which they sell, and that's not taxed, but you get sort of the share price during that period when they're selling the shares. Or you can take cash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are these shares in an IRA or outside of an IRA for you?
They're in an IRA.
Okay.
All my stuff's in IRAs.
All right.
So
What's your question for us?
My question is, if I take the cash, which I did last time, and I notice that I paid 20% tax to the Spanish government because it's a Spanish bank. So I get, instead of whatever it is, 22 cents, I get 17 cents. So my question
is... the Spanish government had withheld that tax for you. Is that correct? I have no idea how the Spanish government collects the revenue.
And so this share doesn't say ADR on it or anything like that? Where it lists the name of the stock? Does it say ADR anywhere?
I think it's an ADR. Yeah, okay. I think it is an ADR.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a Spanish bank. They have branches here in... Yeah. They have a subsidiary here in the United States. They got them all over the world. They just opened.
And so, typically,
Commonwealth Bank.
Typically, if a dividend's taxable, whether or not you choose to receive that dividend in cash or in shares. So you could have a company issue a dividend in shares, and it can still be a taxable event to you. So,
It's not. It's in an IRA. So not. I'm not.
Okay.
Okay, it's in an IRA. So there's no U.S. tax involved.
Yeah.
But so kind of my question is, since the Spanish bank, if I take the dividend cash, because I am thinking about wanting to go to better bars, I am a little bit impacted by the less income.
Particularly when that paint's taking a while to dry. Yeah. Just don't stay too close to the epoxy.
Yeah, there you go.
So what's your question for us?
It's like a little bonus. So I'd like to get some cash. And I'm thinking maybe that I've already paid the Spanish government. So let's say it's a 22-cent dividend, and they've already pulled off their 20%. So it's 17, 18 cents. And I'm going to pull it out of the IRA, or I'm going to have them deposit it in a bank account that's not in the IRA. Or I don't exactly know how.
Okay.
The question is the U.S. government going to come after me after the 17 cents income?
Yes. Whenever you take money out of an IRA, the government doesn't care if that money came from a dividend, from a capital gain,
they don't
from
care
interest.
You could put municipal bonds in there that are tax-free in your IRA. I wouldn't, but
When it comes out of there, it is taxed as ordinary income. Now,
regardless of what the source of the money was.
Having said that, you do get an offset on foreign taxes paid, and I'm not a tax preparer, but I would believe the minuscule amount.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, the minuscule amount that you've paid to, unless you've got a huge.
How big is your holding in the Santander? How much? How much dollars?
15,000 shares, $50,000 or $60,000.
Okay. How big's the IRA?
So it's a couple. The IRA.
Yeah.
The whole IRA.
Yeah.
Is like $300,000.
Then you're asking the wrong question.
Yeah.
Or we're giving the wrong advice.
Yeah.
My question would be, why in the world do you have such a huge percentage of your portfolio in a Spanish bank?
I like it.
Okay, well, good enough.
I do all kind of stuff I like.
Yeah, good.
Solar panels, and I don't even use much electricity. That's what I do.
So are you trying to enhance your financial life? Mm-hmm. Is that why you're calling the program?
Well, I was just curious about this dividend thing. Basically,
so,
I'm going to get an offset for the money that I'm paying the Spanish government.
Yes. You may get an offset, probably. So ask your tax advisor calculate that.
It will be on
your tax advisor.
Well, you got to get better
who
than
does
that.
Your taxes?
You've never even met us.
On your on your taxes,
it's free.
Foreign taxes paid, there's an offset for foreign taxes paid. And if you notice on your tax return, there's a line item on that if you're paying foreign taxes, assuming you're having your taxes done correctly, it will be on there, and there is an offset for that. So you're not double taxed.
Yeah. Okay, and that's the answer to your question. But
I'm going to pay the withdrawal fee from the I'm going to pay tax because I took it out of the IRA.
Assuming you're over age 59 and a half, there'll be no penalties. And you said you were 63, so
that's
right.
Okay.
So you're fine there. You're just going to pay taxes on it. But you've heard it here. You call for free advice. We're going to give it to you whether you want it or not. We think you're out of your mind.
Right?
We think you're out of your mind to keep that large a percentage of a portfolio in a single company stock, let alone
a Spanish bank.
A Spanish bank.
Yeah.
And I've been to the town of Santander. It's beautiful.
It's nice, huh?
It is really nice.
But you don't own any of the shares of their bank.
But I don't own any shares of the bank.
How long have you held this? That's really interesting. How long have you held these shares?
I hope you bought it. I hope you bought it in the downturn.
Fours, yeah.
Did you?
It's good. Yeah.
How long have you got?
Fours.
4 or 5 years?
Yeah. Well, you know, it went up a little bit, and I sold some. It was in the fours, and then it went to the seven.
All right, Dave. Yeah. So let me ask you a question.
Dave,
you meet me for the first time.
I added to it recently.
Dave, you meet me for the first time. Pat McClain,
okay.
Advisor extraordinaire. And I say, Dave, this is what I want you to do. I want you to take your $300,000, and I want you to put $300,000, and I want you to put 20% in a single company stock. What would you say to me?
He would probably say, tell me more. Sounds intriguing.
No. I'd say, you know what? I always listen to free advice.
All right. All right. Appreciate the call.
Good. Dave, we wish you well
on both your investments and your boat.
Yeah. The boat sounds like more fun, actually. We appreciate the call. You know, it's interesting. Pat often does that where as you met a financial advisor the first time and they made this recommendation, and sometimes you do that to try to, when people have a portfolio that just seems kind of out of whack, something unusual, it's like, someone actually recommend this to you, you wouldn't walk away, you'd run away.
Correct.
And so if you went to a financial advisor and they said they recommend 20% of the portfolio to go on one particular company, a Spanish bank,
you would think, what am I doing here?
Yeah, that or
so
it's going to be...
So oftentimes in life, anyway, I wanted to ask you before we go to talk to Barbara Healy. You did this California International Marathon this weekend.
Last weekend.
Yes, this last weekend. And you guided a blind person?
Did I
see that? I saw a clip on local television about that. I meant to mention that. You look pretty good.
Well, thank you.
So tell me about the California International Marathon. What was it called?
it's called the California International Marathon.
No,
just
what
you
the,
said.
What's the
we'll make this
blind
quick,
program?
It's the... United States Association of Blind Athletes. These are for visually impaired runners, include people that have some sort of degenerative disease, as well as people like veterans. There was a dinner the night before. There was 40 of these individuals throughout the country. Actually, a few international. A veteran spoke who became obviously blind as a result of his service. And now as a runner. And so what's interesting, there's 40 of these individuals that showed up for this race. They're some of the most inspiring people to be around because these are people that, rather than feeling sorry for themselves, they've been through a tremendous challenge in their life. And yet they're not only survivors, they're winners, right? And so they're out there running. So I had that privilege and the opportunity to be a guide to a runner during the race. So I ran along actually right in front of this guy, Eric Manser, in the marathon, and would point out things, watch for this, watch for that. And that's essentially his eyes during the race.
And this was
and then I'd go and grab water at the aid stations.
I saw in the news thing, this was his 16th marathon?
Yeah.
How many have you run?
About the same, I guess, somewhere in there. I don't know.
Was he a good runner, though?
Yeah.
Good, strong runner?
Not a very good guy, but he was a good runner. No, he was a great guy, too. That's bad. But it's just cool. And actually, Hanson McClain, we were the sponsor.
Oh, we were.
The presenting sponsor.
We were.
Yeah. We got some good people.
It was nice of us. Yeah. I didn't know that. I did not know that.
You didn't?
No, I did not.
I ran it last year. I was actually so inspired that when they asked me for the sponsorship, I said, sure, Hanson McClain.
Well, that was nice of us.
Sponsor that. And it's right up with I Love Running anyway, and gives me
and helping people to.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
All right. Well, let's talk about, we'll talk a little bit. Thanks for sharing that, Scott. A little bit of achievement here. We have got Barbara Healy.
Yeah. So we're going to talk now real advice. This is a segment of our program where we come each week and talk to one of our advisors, Hanson McClain Financial Advisor, and hear about a real-life story and how the advisor worked with this client to presumably make their life better. And this is not necessarily indicative of all clients at Hanson McClain, and every situation is unique. But anyway, Barbara, welcome to Hanson McClain. And Barbara Healy is a financial advisor, certified financial planner, chartered retirement planning counselor, and has been with Hanson McClain for over a decade and meets with clients in Northern California. So Barbara, welcome to Hanson McClain.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Well, it's nice. Always nice to have you on the program, Barbara.
Thank you.
Yeah, so tell us about the individual or couple you're working with and what the issue was and all that good stuff.
Yeah, 65-year-old retired executive. She was taking too much from her investments, so it was quickly eroding the portfolio value. She was taking something like 10 or 12% of the portfolio value.
And that's when you met her?
Right.
Okay, single lady? Oh, you said widow.
Widow, yep.
Okay.
She retired 10 years earlier at 55. So here's how this developed. You think, okay, how do we get to this point? Because when you watch the portfolio value reduce, either you're taking distributions and then the market takes a hit, it just feels like a double whammy, and it is really. So she retired young at 55. That was the first contributing factor. So the longer we draw on our funds, the more pressure on the portfolio, right? But the bigger mistakes, I should say, would be from the two professionals who gave her advice, a CPA and a former advisor. The CPA said, buy the biggest house you can to maximize.
No way.
Quote unquote. What time, guys, you get this question too. What time of year do clients typically ask if they should buy rental?
When they file their tax return.
Always.
Yeah, spring.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, no one likes it, but is it necessarily the best thing to do?
Yeah, you don't spend a dollar to save 30 cents. That's just basic.
Right.
So
hey, how old was she when she was advised to buy the biggest house? Was she married at the time?
No, widow. And she was a successful executive, worked overseas, and, you know, she retired young but became a widow, and, you know, none of us can understand what that may be like. So understandable, she left at 55. But that's when the CPA said, buy the biggest house you can.
All right, first mistake.
First. Second, from a former advisor, and this is the key, they recommended she take her monthly income that she needed exclusively from the trust. She had a Roth, she had an IRA, but the advice was, leave those alone. The problem is, the trust was eventually drained, right? So here's what happens. She withdraws $9,000 per month and gets very comfortable on that income. She has low taxable income. It's coming from the trust.
Oh, no.
Perfect. But to get the same $9,000, once the trust runs out, from the IRA, you need to take $12,000.
And for the rest of the listeners, the reason there is because the trust was primarily taxed before, which means if you do a distribution for money that sits outside of an IRA, most of it's going to come to you tax-free. From an IRA, it's going to be taxable. That's interesting, Barbara.
Right. Yeah.
So all of a sudden, this percentage, the distribution goes up.
Exactly. And again, any market blip is just unnerving for her. And, you know, she had a safety net of some inheritance, but, you know, there's no guarantee of that. Her mother's in her 90s and could use it for care. So had she come to us at retirement, we would have advised distribution sequencing. I mean, it sounds like a fancy term, but it's the ability to hedge tax rates so as not to have all of your income taxed one way.
Yeah, you might have a little bit coming from everywhere, right?
Right. So each type of account has different tax implications. I've heard you guys talk about this on the show a lot. Roth monies, distributions, tax-free. Trust, Pat, as you just said, distributions aren't taxed, but you have dividends and capital gains and maybe some tax losses that can offset the gains, so you can do some tax planning. But an IRA, ordinary income, just like you were telling the caller, and that's typically a client's highest tax rate.
Yep.
So it's challenging. And we don't know the future of what tax rates will be.
Of course,
nor do we know which type of tax will apply. Might they suddenly say, hey, well, you guys know, I mean, you've been doing this 25 years. I'm close to that. It wasn't all that long ago that capital gains were taxed at ordinary income.
That's right.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So here's the situation. A woman comes to you, 65 years old, been widowed for a number of years. CPA recommends she buys a big house. If she buys a big house.
How big was her mortgage approximately?
$350,000.
Okay.
If some other advisor tells her, why don't you just spend down your trust account, let these other dollars grow. So now she's got this kind of lopsided portfolio, and she can't maintain the distribution she's got now. What did you do to help? I mean, we're not magicians, right? As financial advisors, you can only do so much. What did you recommend?
Slowly, carefully, strongly recommended that she get out from under that $350,000 mortgage. And that is not an easy message to hear. Can you imagine? I mean, someone tells you, you need to move. I mean, that's not an easy message, but she understood the math of it. You know, bright lady, but she understood the math, and she's her house is just about sold. And since she became a client, she did slowly start to reduce her distribution. So she'd drop it $500 for 6 months and see how she did on that, and then drop another $500. So that's helped.
Oh, good.
But you know, the takeaway is, you need the big picture advice, and you need someone who can plan, do some cash flow planning. This isn't
simple stuff. The CPA looked at her taxes. This other investment professional of some sort just looked at from an investment standpoint, and you, as a certified financial planner, said, "How do we put all this stuff together, and what makes the most sense? What's realistic? How can we make sure you can maintain your standard of living?"
Quite frankly, the client had the wherewithal to understand that the situation needed to change. Some clients don't. Some clients will just pretend.
That's why they came and talked to Barbara, right?
Yeah, some clients just pretend that it'll be okay.
Yeah.
That is a good story, Barbara. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing, Barbara.
Thanks, as always, for being part of the team here at Hanson McLean.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks. And sometimes, you know, it's interesting. I appreciate Barbara sharing this story, because we have a variety of different types of stories. And here's the story where she had to tell a woman two things. One, you got to downsize your house.
You can't afford it.
And two, you got to cut your income.
You can't afford it. You're going to run out of money. And three, your mom's alive at the age of 90, and you're 60, what'd you say she was, 65?
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, we are getting close to the end of the program, which is always a sad time for us, because it means that we don't have any more time to chat with you.
You can spend more time with us at moneymatters.com.
Yeah, go to moneymatters.com. You can learn more about Hanson McLean. If you want to learn more about some of the services we provide, like Barbara had discussed, how you too can be forced to sell your house and cut your income for retirement. But I think the fact is, one of the things at Hanson McLean, we've always prided ourselves on telling people what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. And I think you'll get a sense of that if you've listened to this program for any length of time, which we've been doing for over 20 years. So we are out of time, but we're here every week. You could also get a podcast of this program at moneymatters.com. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.